The senior police officer in charge of OMA at the time of the 1998 bombing has told how he tried to cope with the aftermath of the bomb while consoling his son, whose girlfriend had been killed. James Baxter was speaking as the inquiry continued to hear from those who were in the County Tyrone town on the day. Our northern correspondent, Conor McCauley, has been telling me about his evidence.
Well, James Baxter is now retired. He was at the time, back in 1998, the senior officer in charge of OMA. He told the inquiry today that he was actually out of town on the day of the bombing. He got a message to tell him about the alert. The message said that the bomb, the device, as it was reputed to be at that stage, had been left in the area of the courthouse, which was at the opposite end of the town, of course, to where the explosion actually happened. Mr. Baxter said that he had ordered a total evacuation of the area, and then a short time later, he heard on a news bulletin, in fact, that the bomb had actually gone off. And later then, as he rushed back down the road to OMA, he heard that there were fatalities. When he arrived back in the town, he took over the police operation. He declared a major incident. He spoke then of how he had struggled, I suppose, to remain professional, as he realised that he knew very many of the dead and injured personally, including one young woman that his own family was particularly close to.
As I learned the names of those who had died, I also realised that many were known to me personally. However, despite the emotional impact that I was experiencing, I knew I had to continue to function in a professional manner to ensure that the police response and follow-up investigation was facilitated in every way possible. I had also to display leadership to my officers, who were also severely emotionally impacted by the events which had occurred. Late on the evening of the 15th, I became aware that my son's girlfriend had also died in the explosion. Unable to return home, I contacted my wife by telephone and asked her to break the news to my son.
Well, Rachel, Mr. Baxter said that in the aftermath of the bombing, he visited as many of the bereaved homes as he could. He said, he described that actually as the most difficult duty of a 30-year career. He said he too personally was grieving, of course, and he was dealing with his son's anguish. He also talked too about how he was worried about his officers, the officers under his command. He said they'd been traumatised by what they had been through. And he also went on to say that how the police in the town also had to deal with a succession of hoax calls to OMA in subsequent weeks, resulting in continual evacuations of the town, which you can imagine was very much re-traumatizing for all of the officers who'd been on duty on the day of the actual bombing. In fact, a week after the bomb, a hoax was called in. Mr. Baxter said he was in the area. He met a young constable at the scene. She was very distressed, and she said to him, "I don't think I can keep doing this." And Mr. Baxter went on to describe an investigation of this hoax call campaign, which resulted in the arrest of a man in Letterkenny. And he said that at that point, the hoax calls stopped.
Two officers who were in OMA on the day of the bombing, Conor, also had their statements read into the record this morning.
That's right. The first of those was Alan Palmer. He had been sent to the scene. A police officer had been sent to the scene to help evacuate when that bomb alert came in. He was actually down the town quite close to the scene of the explosion when the bomb went off. He described it as a flash followed by a great suction and then the pain of being hit by flying glass. He described in very graphic detail finding the dead, helping the injured. He saw some grievously injured people. He took a badly injured woman to hospital, the local hospital in the town. But when he arrived there, he was told there was no more room for any more casualties. And he was then instructed to go 25 miles to Enniskillen, where there's another hospital. But on the way down the road, they ran out of fuel and he had to requisition some from people who he said were very, very keen, obviously, to help him. He helped there at the Erin Hospital, he said, taking casualties out of military helicopters that were arriving until the doctors insisted that he himself got treatment for his back injuries. He said the memories and the emotions that he has of that day and that he carries to this day were really too many to include all of them in his statement. He talked about the horrors, the guilt, the anger, and the helplessness, and a final message to the families of the dead and indeed the injured. He said simply, look, we did our best. Following his evidence then, we heard from the account of another officer, Julian Elliott. He had actually taken up a liaison role at the leisure centre, which is where families who couldn't find their loved ones were being sent to await news. Mr Elliott was shuttling, I suppose, back and forth between the leisure centre and the temporary morgue. He wasn't really meant to tell people anything until everything had been officially confirmed, but he found that he couldn't stick to that. He described how he took people out of the room in the leisure centre one by one. He said he asked for the families for who they thought would be the strongest member of the family, and then he took them for a walk and he said to them, do you want to know what I know? And all of them, he said yes, and then he told them to prepare their families for the worst of news.
Some hugged me, some beat my chest, some hyperventilated and collapsed on the floor. It was a mixture of responses, as you can imagine, from humanity. This went on all night, relaying death messages and trying to be as kind with my words and gentle as I could.
Connor, the inquiry took a break for a time this morning. Why was that?
Yes, it sat unusually early this morning, around about 9:30. Normally starts about 10 o'clock and it worked through there till just before 11 o'clock. The reason for that is that a lady called Tracy Devine, who was the mother of 20-month-old Breda Devine, one of the youngest victims of the atrocity, she actually died at the weekend, and her funeral is taking place today. So it was really, I suppose, as a mark of respect to the Devine family, and also to give an opportunity to anybody who might have been attending the inquiry and who may also have wanted to attend the funeral to go to the service.
And that was our Northern correspondent, Connor McCall.